Welcome to the Daily Tour Podcast, brought to you by the Fredcast Cycling Podcast, Bicycle.net, and Fredcast Tours. This daily summary of the 2008 Amgen Tour of California will be presented soon after the conclusion of each day's racing so that you can stay up to date on this important annual cycling event. The Daily Tour is sponsored by Fredcast Tours. Fredcast Tours is the perfect companion to the Fredcast Cycling Podcast and this Daily Tour summary. This year, we'll be riding from Salzburg, Austria to Venice, Italy, climbing the Dolomites and traversing some of the famous Giro d'Italia routes. The trip takes place June 25th through July 4th, 2008. Come along with us, take in the scenery, taste the local delicacies, become steeped in the cultures, but most of all, enjoy the ride. Visit www.fredcasttours.com for more information. And now, today's Daily Tour Podcast, presented by the Fredcast, powered by the resources of Bicycle.net, and brought to you by Fredcast Tours. Welcome back to our coverage of the 2008 Amgen Tour of California. This is David from the Fredcast Cycling Podcast, and this show is powered, as it has been all week, by the resources of Bicycle.net. Today is February the 22nd, 2008, and it's time for what a lot of people have felt would be the pivotal stage in this year's Tour of California. It's the individual time trial in Solvang, California. It's about a 15-mile race, but with the gap between race leader Levi Leipheimer and second place Fabian Cancellara from Team CSC being just 13 seconds, and considering the fact that both Levi and Fabian are excellent time trialers, Levi having won this stage in last year's Tour of California, Fabian, the two-time world champion in the art of time trialing, today's stage is shaping up to be the battle royale of this year's Tour of California. Now, we will get to the review of today's stage in just a couple of minutes, but first, we've got a couple of pre-race interviews. You will, however, want to stay tuned until the end of today's show, because we have an exclusive interview with Rock Racing's Michael Ball, and I know that you're going to want to hear the answers to the questions that we put to Mr. Ball earlier today. But first, we want to get to some pre-race interviews, and first, we had a chance to speak with Team Director Rolf Aldag from High Road Sports. Now, Rolf is a veteran of 10 Tours de France. He's a well-known professional, former professional cyclist, now directing Team High Road. We had a chance to ask him about George Hincapie's performance in yesterday's brutal Stage 4, when George was the most aggressive rider for the day. We had a chance to talk to Rolf and ask him just a little bit about George's performance yesterday.
Well, I think he said it was the day he will probably always remember. He never got that cold on a bike ride ever before, and he said, like, I'm professional for 15 years. And but he still had a really super spirit up there. I mean, he tried everything, and he was right there in the breakaway group, and sure, he wanted to win, couldn't make it, but he said, the way he explained it, like, how cold he was, like, couldn't feel his arms anymore, and was so difficult to eat, and open the bars and the power bars and everything. So he's still there. He's still alive. I think we'll see him in the next 2 days again.
Now, with a performance like that and with cold like that, is George going to be going all out today, or is he resting?
Well, for George, I think it's better if he takes it easy. Yeah, like probably most of the guys, because obviously they're really, really specialists and experts, and they are even fighting for the GC, so they will prepare and they will be right there, Zabriskie, Leipheimer, Cancellara, and then it's really hard to go into that group, and then it's maybe better to say, like, well, we've got two stages left and we try to take our chance there.
Yesterday's stage really did belong to not just the breakaway riders, but specifically to Dominique Rolland. And the question was, when Dominique went down the road, was there a possibility that George would catch him, or did he just not have the legs?
Really the best man won yesterday. I mean, that's obviously first. They had it in mind to say, that's a great situation. He took off, so let him die out there. Had strong headwind, just like, yeah, go, let him go for 20 seconds and then, you know, out for 20 kilometers and then he will cause no more trouble. And then they couldn't pull him back. So it's like he was so strong. And Joseph, he tried everything. He felt really, really good and couldn't do it at the end anymore.
I would have to say that if there's one question that I've gotten more often than any over the last 24 hours, it's how do the riders handle conditions like that? And what do the teams do to make sure that their riders are taken care of?
Yeah, I mean, sure, you take care of the riders as good as you can. And I have to say our riders didn't complain at all. They didn't like make a big deal out of it. It's you know, about motivation. It's like being into that race as well, because others, well, they just stopped in the peloton and stepped right into the car without being dropped and everything. So it was a terrible day from the temperatures, but I really have to say the team did a good job. And well, we still had the rain bags from the two riders who stepped out of the race, so we gave everything away and, you know, helping the riders to get their jackets close, because it's so difficult then with the frozen hands to get the zipper in the right place. And I was happy after pushing them back on the bike. I was happy to get in my car again.
Probably the second most common question that I've been asked over the last few days, and one we wanted to ask Rolf also, was what is it with this stomach bug and how does it travel so fast among the peloton?
That's actually a good question. First, yeah, we had that really in the early stages, because right first stage was Edvald Hagen. He did a brilliant prologue, finished fifth, and we had high expectations. And then the next day he struggled badly and we thought like something is wrong, and he got really, really sick, and his roommate got sick right the next day, so he basically gave it to him. The first expectation was like food poison or something, but it took too long and our doctor said, no, it can't be that, so it must be a virus that goes around. And it's hard to tell where it comes from, but basically you have no chance to protect yourself. If, you know, we share the hotel with like more or less every team at the beginning, and then it's no way to protect yourself, because you're eating in one big room and you're sitting together there and using the same toilet. So it's just the way it is. It's not nice, because a lot of riders really prepared for this race and it's a big event. And then it's really sad to say, like, oh, it's over after 2 days.
And finally, with all of the weather and the sickness, we don't think that this is exactly what the peloton signed up for. Is this going to be one of the most memorable races for a lot of these racers?
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, especially, you know, you don't expect to fly to California and then face basically the situation like in the Belgian Classic. So you have to adapt to that first of all, and it looks like it clears off a little bit now, and let's hope for a good two more stages. No, I think still it's a really well organized race, and people like to do it here, and we'll come back with a strong team, that's for sure.
Well, after we talked to Rolf and we talked to him about George Hincapie's performance yesterday, we had the opportunity to speak with yesterday's stage winner, Dominique Rolland. We simply asked Dominique, take us through that last 20K of yesterday's brutal stage.
Yeah, the last 20K was just like a time trial to the finish. With 25K to go, I saw the guys starting to paying for the day out there. So guys started skipping pools and getting unorganized. So I had to do something, because otherwise I think they would have soon realized that I was one of the strongest out there. So I decided just to hit it before we get caught by the field, and it just held on.
And so with an answer like that, it sort of begs the question, was this something that you had planned, or was it just that you saw everybody weaken and you just decided to go for it?
I just went for it. I had no really plan, because I knew I could get it from a sprint. So I just went and hope that someone can bridge and we'll just go man to man. But when I saw I had a good gap, I just kept going, and that was it.
Yesterday, Dominique mentioned that the worse the conditions are, the better he rides. And we wanted to know, where else had he ridden in such brutal conditions?
In 2005, stage two of Tour de Beauce, we had about, I'd say, 40 degrees Fahrenheit and gusty winds going up to 70 km an hour. I saw guys getting lift up the road and landing in the ditch. And that was a crazy day. I ended up winning the stage. I knew I could do good in those kind of conditions. Yeah, I was maybe one of the only guys smiling on the start line, and I knew my job was to get in the break. I wasn't known for many big teams and not a marked man, so I could get up there, manage to bridge to the good break, and that was it.
After we talked with Dominique, we had time for just one more interview, and so we tracked down race director Jim Burrell because we got the following voicemail from a listener.
Good morning, David. My name is Cliff in Dallas, Texas. One thing I've noticed on the Amgen Tour of California this year is there's absolutely no talk about it being a UCI Pro event. Last year, not a day went by when there weren't 3, 4, maybe even 5 references to that. This year, absolutely nothing. Is that out of the question? What's the situation on that? Inquiring minds want to know.
So, Cliff, we thought that was an excellent question, and we asked Jim Burrell for his answer.
No, I think we're going to continue with our walk before a run approach. You know, we want to fine-tune this engine to make sure that it's running on all cylinders. Not that it isn't, but just really focus on our goals, and that is to build a safe and successful race. And before we start introducing the idea of a Pro Tour event, you know, We want to encourage our continental teams to aspire to be on a Pro Tour platform, and the only way we can do that is by staying a 2HC and allowing the BMCs and the Jelly Bellies of the world to race against the world's best. So right now we're going to stay where we're at.
But we couldn't let it go at that because we've seen Pat McQuaid walking around and checking the race out again this year as he did last year, so we wanted to know, is there more to the story?
No, he's here just as an observer. I mean, this is his third year back to the Tour of California, and, you know, he's a good friend of the Tour and a good friend of ours, and, you know, he enjoys this, and, you know, he wants to see his Pro Tour teams and just keep that open dialogue as we look towards the future.
So there you go, Cliff. A definite maybe from race director Jim Burrell. Well, let's talk briefly about today's Stage 6 individual time trial in Solvang, California, and then we will also include some of the press conference highlights. We'll hear from Levi Leipheimer, and we will also hear from UCI President Pat McQuaid. He'll have several comments. And then we'll conclude with our interview with Michael Ball from Rock Racing. Well, today's Stage 6 in Solvang, California, was one of the stages that everyone was keying on as being critical to the win in this year's Amgen Tour of California. Now, nothing is decided until we get to Pasadena on Sunday. Nevertheless, with guys like Levi Leipheimer and Fabian Cancellara battling for the Golden Leaders jersey of the Amgen Tour of California, you know that a time trial is critical. Well, before we went into today's stage, Cancellara, the world time trial champion, was just 13 seconds behind Levi Leipheimer for the golden jersey in the general classification of this year's race. However, as we got closer and closer to Levi crossing the finish line, now you'll remember, of course, that because Levi was the leader in the general classification, Levi was the last man to leave the start house today. And of course, as they go down the road, we look at their split times, and as Levi got to his mid-course split, it looked very good that he was on course for a victory. And by the end of the day, by the time that Levi crossed the finish line in 30 minutes and 46 seconds, it was clear that he had solidified his lead in the general classification in this year's Amgen Tour of California. Levi Leipheimer did win today's individual time trial in 30 minutes, 46 seconds. Second place went to Slipstream Chipotle's David Miller, 29 seconds slower than Levi today. Third, Christian Vandevelde, also a teammate of David Miller, 45 seconds back of Levi. Fourth went to Gustav Larsson from Team CSC, 58 seconds back, and then in fifth, a full minute and 5 seconds behind your race leader, Levi Leipheimer, the world champion, Fabian Cancellara. As a result of today's stage, Levi Leipheimer is now 49 seconds up On second place in the general classification, David Miller. Christian Vandevelde is in third, 1 minute, 8 seconds back. Fabian Cancellara is 1 minute, 18 seconds back. And just 1 second slower is Gustav Larsson from Team CSC. Now, because there were no KOM points and no sprint points, there are no changes, and the King of the Mountain, Scott Knightum, is still safely ensconced in that jersey. And in the green jersey, 4 points, of course, it's Dominique Rolland following his amazing performance yesterday, winning a ton of sprint bonuses. Best young rider is still Robert Gesink from Team Rabobank. So, of course, at the end of the day's racing, we had the chance to listen to Levi Leipheimer as he commented on the day's race and on the day's conditions.
Yeah, it was, first of all, it was another great day for me here in Solvang, and I'm just so happy and so proud to be leading the race, and I just gave it all I had today. I had my doubts, but I just kept telling myself I'll do my best. That's all I can do, and I think the conditions were exactly the same as last year. It was a little bit windy, and, you know, I can remember having to decide on a little bit of equipment choice, and I made the same decision this year, and it was a good decision.
Levi was then asked to comment on Fabian Cancellara and the day that he had as compared to just a few days ago when he had an amazing performance.
Yeah, you know, we're not machines, and he made an amazing performance the other day, and really blew everyone away with how well he climbed. I think he showed a lot of guts and a lot of heart, and everyone in the peloton has a lot of respect for Fabian. He's one of the big names in the sport. He's a star, and what he did was amazing. But you know, like I said, we're not machines, so you pay for that. And you know, obviously today was not a normal Fabian Cancellara. He's better than that, and I guess I'm just a little bit lucky.
So there's your race leader, Levi Leipheimer, a gracious winner and a gentleman. Still has a couple days more of racing to go. We'll see how that plays out for Levi when we head into Pasadena on Sunday. We also had a visit today at the press conference by one Pat McQuaid. As you know, Pat's in charge of the UCI. That's the International Cycling Union. They're the ones who put on the Pro Tour and who sanction events. And one of the questions that Pat was asked was, would it be possible for the Tour of California to expand the number of days? And Pat took that question a little bit farther than the questioner had perhaps thought that he would, but I think that his answer is interesting. Listen carefully what he has to say about the Tour de France.
There's no real limit on the number of days it can have if they wish to grow to 9, 10, 11, 12. Once we sit down with AG and with US Cycling and discuss the strategy for the race going forward, then we will, you know, consider whatever days or dates and days within that strategy. So there, when you talk of, you know, a grand tour, there are 3 grand tours at the moment in the world, and there's no reason why there couldn't be another couple of grand tours in the world. And you know, this could be a you know, a candidate for that type of event. Now, whether you're talking about 3 weeks or 4 weekends and 3 weeks, which the Tour de France is, it's possibly a bit long. I think the general thinking among a lot of the cycling fraternity now is that even 3 weeks and 4 weekends is a little bit too long for the Tour de France. I got enough problems with them at the moment without trying to shorten that. And likewise, the other two, the Giro and the Vuelta, you know, there's a lot of support to the fact that they should be shortened a little bit as well. And then that would give us the opportunity to open up new avenues for other races in different parts of the world to expand.
Mr. McQuaid was then asked 2 questions. The first regarding the Astana ASO situation and the fact that Astana is currently not allowed to race in the 2008 Tour de France. And the second regarding the fact that there were the Rock Racing riders who were not allowed to start in the 2008 Amgen Tour of California. He took those 2 questions in reverse, and you'll hear his answers. I have left them here unedited, and they are a bit lengthy, but I think that it's important that you hear them in their entirety.
As far as the UCI is concerned, we have to stand by the rules, and the rules are that all riders who have a license are allowed to race. And unless you're sanctioned, you don't, and have no license, then you're barred from racing. In relation to AEG, and I think this is Andrew's question really to answer, but my understanding, and he can correct me if he's wrong, is that the AEG signed a contract with all of the teams that they wouldn't put in riders who were under investigation. And in relation to the riders involved in Operation Puerto, it could be maintained that they are riders under investigation. That investigation was opened by the UCI, providing their federations with files in which there was evidence that the UCI felt that they were involved in an anti-doping violation. Those files have not been closed because the judge, Serrano, didn't allow us to use that information for a sports disciplinary procedure. And so now with the reopening of Operation Puerto, hopefully we can get to the end of that situation and either riders will get sanctioned or they'll get, they'll get off or whatever it might be, but hopefully we'll get to the end of it. It's an unfortunate situation for the riders involved because a lot of them have in some sense or some way or other served practically 2-year sentences, even though they haven't been sentenced. That's not something which we like. It's not something that we can do anything about, though, because it is the Spanish judiciary which has put us in that position. In relation to the first question, I think most of you, certainly media, would have read comments that I made over the last week or two about the Astana situation and the Tour de France. I think it is a completely unjust decision. It is not consistent. Because if they say that Astana damaged the Tour de France last year and so therefore the Astana team shouldn't be invited to the Tour de France this year, several teams, and I don't want to name particular teams, but several teams damaged the Tour de France last year, so several teams should have been excluded from this year's Tour de France. So the decision is not consistent. It is a collective punishment against riders as well, which is wrong. And it's particularly wrong because it is a collective punishment against riders who had absolutely nothing to do with the Astana team of last year. The Astana team this year is under completely new management. It's practically a completely new group of riders. They have brought in the Ramses Damsgaard CSC stroke anti-doping program. They are involved in the biological passport program. So from that point of view, the Astana team is on the same level as the other 17 teams of the Pro Tour. The decision was not made on the basis of any... there's no justification in the decision, other than to say it was an arbitrary decision, subjective decision. It was a decision made for reasons other than sporting reasons. The people who, and this is something I feel very strongly about, the people who made this decision are not cyclists and have never been cyclists. They don't understand, and he's sitting here beside me, and I've said this already, and I'll say it while he's beside me as well, but they don't understand that since Levi stood on the podium of the Tour de France last July, every waking minute since then, he has thought about getting back onto that podium in a higher position this July. They don't understand what it is to do that. They don't understand the effort and the work and the dreams and how much it occupies your whole life for Levi, nor indeed for Contador as well, who won the race last year. And it is completely wrong. It is unsporting. It is against fair play. And what I can say is that the UCI will fight this decision right to the 1st of July, in whatever means and whatever way we can.
Frank words and harsh criticisms for the ASO decision to exclude Astana from the Tour de France, but a muted reaction about AEG's decision to exclude the riders from Rock Racing. Well, speaking of Rock Racing, we have the opportunity to sit down today for an extended interview with Michael Ball, the owner of Team Rock Racing. Well, our first question for Michael was, Michael, we noted that people love you or hate you, and there's very little in between. Why do you think that is?
Once people meet me, they can understand really where I'm going with this. It's not rocket science. It's just trying to elevate the sport to a higher level of sporting, first and foremost, and fairness, but also entertainment. I mean, everything in life these days in the 21st century is entertainment. And if you don't treat it that way and you don't elevate it and grab that, entertainment dollar, you're just going to lose. And that's really my intention here, is to elevate this sport. Yes, there's a old guard and, it's been around for, close to 100 years, and so be it. But I think we can do something with this sport that until now hasn't really had a chance to happen. Although back when Le Mans and Tepe had put together Lavie Claire and had Mondrian create the jerseys. Same kind of thing, a bit of a showman, elevated the sport to the point where, you know, Greg LeMond was the highest paid athlete at the time and brought in some great new technology and changed the sport. So I hope to do things similar to that in the sense that we can make this sport much greater than it is today.
Now, in Michael's press conference earlier this week, he mentioned a rider union, and we wanted to know whether or not Michael is going to be the one to spearhead that union himself.
I'll be one of the individuals. I don't know if I can personally spearhead it myself, but I'm willing to help underwrite it. I'm willing to help lay the groundwork, if you will, and create some certain protocols. And then on the other side, a team owners organization as well, because those are the two power entities. Yeah, the promoters, but their power only exists at that particular time of the calendar that they own. We have the power. The team owners, if we get together, and the riders get together, and it's obviously two sides of the aisle there. But you know, someday it might come and bite me in my ass because you know we've given the riders so many rights, and I'm gonna have to pay for those rights. But that's okay because they deserve it. It's long overdue for these athletes to be respected and treated in a manner that is dignified and really speaks to who they are as individuals and athletes. They are people who, if you train, you ride your bike, you know how difficult that is. You know the suffering and the commitment that it takes to get to the level of these athletes. And for my money, these are the greatest athletes on the planet, period, bar none.
Now, we had some listeners who emailed and wanted to know, based on some of our previous podcasts this week, if we had the chance to talk to Michael Ball. Was his decision to hire riders like Tyler Hamilton, who have had controversy, who have served doping suspensions in the past, were those riders hired simply because of their talent, or was it to also make a statement about cycling?
It was a combination. It was first and foremost, I had a set team this year in terms of my domestic goals, and that was with Freddie Rodriguez and Chris Horner, and to build a team around them. When Chris Horner frankly punked out, it made me start to look for other riders, and as I did, I saw that Santiago Botero was in Colombia racing and Sevilla couldn't get a contract and Tyler couldn't get a contract. I'm like, are you kidding me? What? So it really brought me full circle, because you know, as a guy who rides and you know, is passionate about the sport, I took some time off. I built a business, and you know, you can't really do both. Unfortunately, I wish you could have. I'd be in better shape right now. but you hear that? You know that the commitment is a thousandfold to get to a level of competition. And when I learned that, you know, it really set me on a path to say this is wrong. And I spent a lot of money with attorneys to make sure that these guys were clean, clear, and ready to race. I'm a businessman first and foremost. There's not a chance that I would have taken any risk in allowing these guys to come up dirty, period. That being said, there is not a shred of evidence that says that these guys cannot race. On the contrary, from a legal perspective, these guys are and can race. And it's unfortunate what happened here at AEG. I think they made a monumental mistake. I think the Tour de France organizers have made a huge mistake as well. What AEG did to allow Astana here is a good thing, but a bad thing at the same time. So they, you know, I guess they just picked their poison, if you will.
So will this year's issues with AEG keep Rock Racing out of future tours of California?
So I signed a contract. I'm a businessman. I'm obligated to that contract, and I'll fulfill those obligations. I don't have a choice from a sponsorship perspective. And the ironic thing is that my intention was to, if Amgen stepped aside, to take over full sponsorship. And with my associations and the sponsors that I have around me as a company, I was going to bring and turn this thing into a fantastic sporting event, far greater than what it is today, far more entertaining, far more, there's no celebrities, so, except for Arnold. But that was just because he got to show his face. But bring a lot of celebrities to the mix, bring a lot more money to the mix. And that's what cycling needs today, fresh ideas, fresh money. Because on the contrary, everyone's leaving this sport. It's it, 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 I hope things change, and I hope that we get the opportunity to compete and do what it is that we do best so that this sport can continue to thrive. If we are not allowed to compete, I'll have to look to where my my dollars are going to. And for Rock Racing as a brand, it's not about just cycling. It's about competitive racing from A to Z, and anything that is involved in that, I want to be a part of. Motorsport, either it's two-wheel, four-wheel, I want to be a part of it. Whether it's human-powered or ethanol-powered, I want to be a part of it.
Now, Michael talks a lot about being a businessman, and there's no doubt about that. He is a successful businessman. But there are those on the internet who are claiming that he is simply a marketer and that it's not about the passion for the sport, it's only about marketing.
Couldn't be further from the truth. If I wanted to make money, there's much easier and better ways to do it than just going through what I've gone through here. Believe me, this is straight up passion and some personal politics and a solid business model. I'm showing that you can, as you can see out there, you can make money in this sport. You don't have to just be sitting there as a beggar, in a sense. These team owners looking for handouts. I'm not that kind of person. I'll make it happen myself. I'll make my own money. I'll invest my own money in my own team. And frankly, in due course, I'll have more than one team. I'll have several teams. I'm going to have a women's team right now under Rock Racing, a juniors team, and two men's team, and an elite team. So I'll do it myself, and I'll bring in other like-minded individuals, entrepreneurs, and or sponsors, brands that are interested in doing this. And again, I'll own two, three, like in any other racing type of a sport. I'll have multiple teams in any racing type of a series or business. You know, the top owners, they own multiple teams to increase their chances of winning that yellow jersey, if you will. Obviously not, but that trophy. You know what I mean? You can go into any motorsport, any types of racing. There's multiple teams that are owned by one guy. And I look to do that as well.
You may recall that in Michael's press conference earlier last week, he mentioned that the Peloton is behind him and in his efforts. And in some of our interviews, we haven't heard that all the time, and we haven't heard that in all of the press conferences. There've been some disagreements. We wanted to know if specific riders had come out in favor of Michael's initiatives.
Absolutely. And there are those riders who say, we support you, but we're afraid that if we do support you, we will have some issues. You know what I mean? And when you have someone like Cancellara makes some comments, it's like, who are you kidding? And the unfortunate thing is, he may be looking for a job next year. You should watch what he says. You know what I mean? Because he's one of them. He's in the Peloton. He's no different than any of my riders. He's an athlete who's trained his whole life, and he should have respect for his fellow athlete, period. He's not any better than any of the governing bodies when they start to out people. He starts making comments like he did on the podium or at the press conference. From my perspective, you know, you look at Chip. All he did is trying to unite, and those younger riders should take heed and have some respect for their fellow athletes. They're all going through this together.
You heard earlier in this week guys like Tyler Farah, who look at Mario Cipollini as a role model, as a youth time hero, as a rock star. We wanted to get Michael's take on that.
Tell you, he's a rock star, he's a celebrity. It's no different than in Hollywood. I mean, this guy demands a certain dollar and demands a certain amount of requests for white jelly beans and Voss water and white roses in his dressing room. So, do you know what I mean? He's a superstar. What are you going to do? Of course you're going to go back and forth. I'm a businessman. He's a superstar. He wants what he wants. I don't want to give it to him, and I want to give the least amount that I can. From a business perspective, he wants to get the most, and it's just the way it is.
We then asked Michael if he had a final word for his critics. And here's what he had to say.
Hang out with me for an hour, and then if you still feel the same way and you think that what I'm doing is strictly a marketing ploy or a... you know what? I'll admit, I don't know what I'm doing as far as a racing team. Trust me. We have issues every day. But I'm learning. You know what I mean? And the fact that we had a Division II issue in our UCI classification is an example of that. But that's okay, you know. It's we're learning. I'm learning. This is new to me. But again, my personal politics is what first drove me to hire these guys, and then building a brand and you know, creating a model that you can make money at this sport.
So will Rock Racing be around next year and the year after that?
Certainly. I mean, I've got a juniors program that say all this went away tomorrow, I'd still get on my bike and go train, and these guys would still be my friends, and frankly, I would still give them a job. I'd give them a job to train my, coach my juniors, or go in the inner city and teach, you know, at-risk kids or underprivileged kids that there's a better way than possible, the path that they're going down right now. They're great ambassadors. They're great guys, great mentors. So I'll still be here some way or shape or form. I love cycling.
So there you go. There's Michael Ball. His last words, I love cycling. Well, despite the fact that everybody had been saying that today's stage would be pivotal and critical to the victory here in the 2008 Amgen Tour of California, there are still two stages to go, and they are still two difficult stages. Let's look at tomorrow's stage six on Saturday, February 23rd, as the riders go from Santa Barbara, California to Santa Clarita, California. It is 105.4 miles. That's nearly 170 kilometers. So this is still no walk in the park. Along the way, they begin with a Category 4 climb, followed by yet another Category 4 climb. They then descend into Ojai, California, where there is a sprint. Then they begin another climb, Category 3 this time, all the way then downhill to Santa Paula, California for a sprint, and then the Category 4 Balcom Canyon, which is always a crowd favorite. I know a number of people who are planning on being out there to spectate there tomorrow. It is a great place to watch a bicycle race. From there, it is still over 50 miles to the finish line in Santa Clarita, California, where last year the crowds were 4, 5, 6 deep, and it should be an exciting finish when the riders get to those finishing circuits in Santa Clarita tomorrow. We will be with you there as well, gathering audio and information for yet another podcast from this year's 2008 Amgen Tour of California. We thank you for being with us today. We look forward to talking to you tomorrow. Thanks for listening. That's it for today's episode of the Daily Tour Podcast. If you'd like to comment on the show, please send an email to thefredcast@gmail.com or send a voicemail to area code 435-258-6373. That's 435-258-6FRED. Please check out our website at www.thefredcast.com for more information about the Fredcast, the Daily Tour, and much more. I'll see you all again tomorrow for another episode of the Daily Tour Podcast, presented by the Fredcast, powered by the resources of Bicycle.net, and brought to you by Fredcast Tours. Thanks for listening.